Ralph, how are you today?
Very well, thanks, Ruby.
That's good to hear. Now, how exactly do smaller aged care homes provide a better quality of life?
Look, I think one of the points that is really important to me to make firstly is that we all know large institutions are not ideal. So, when I was growing up, there were large mental health institutions, large institutions for people with disability, and orphanages for kids. And we know that over the last 30 years that they've all disappeared, basically, and we've moved to much smaller home-like facilities. But the point for me is in aged care, we're kind of going in the other direction. So facilities are becoming larger, often on the argument that it's more economically viable. Now, over the last 20 years, we've seen the average number of beds in a facility increase, and now, on average, in major cities, more than 50% of them would have more than 60 beds in them. So what makes a smaller facility more home-like is that you can get to know people, that it might be a place that grandchildren want to come and visit. So in my own research, I talked to people who lived in these facilities about what they wanted in the built environment. And certainly that sense of intimacy, getting to know other people, and scale. And one of the examples I always talk about is when you have a 60-bed facility and a dining room with 60 chairs in it, imagine 60 people going to that dining room with walkers and having to put those walkers there. How do you get around? How do you feel like you're intimate and part of a smaller group? And the best example I ever heard was someone who did some research in Melbourne Uni in a dementia unit that showed that hearing is often a problem for older people. So if you're in a large room with lots of people in it, a staff member might come and ask you what you want for dinner. You can't hear what they're saying because of all the ambient noise around. And so you say yes, and then the older person tells their daughter that night, "I didn't get the meal I ordered." But the reality was it was the design of the facility that meant she didn't hear, and to be polite, she said yes. So smaller facilities offer more intimacy, and there are certainly examples of Hammond Care in New South Wales who have built smaller dementia homes, and they've been doing that for about 20 years. And what that happens is that it becomes a much more home-like environment, and you come to a front door, and when visitors come, they can get to know the residents. Whereas my mother-in-law, for instance, was in a dementia unit with 30 people. So if you went to sit in the lounge area, there were 30 people sitting around the room. And my view is that that doesn't invite intimacy and human scale. So the smaller facilities, as that research found, seem to improve people's quality of life.
Yeah, so it seems to be better for everyone involved. Everyone involved in aged care, really, for those to have those smaller homes. So,
yeah.
Why do you think we're seeing this trend of more and more older people being squeezed into bigger aged care homes, and more of these being built? That is,
yeah. Look, there are a couple of theories. One theory that I heard at the latest international conference in aging, which was held in Canada recently, with 1,400 delegates from around the world, is really what we're seeing is the impact of ageism, that older people, who go to nursing homes, the majority of them are going to die there, and they're old. And particularly, some would say that most people in residential aged care are older women. So if we want to change it, there has to be a sense of that putting people into large institutions is not a good idea. And that was my call in the article I wrote, is really the Royal Commission is an opportunity to ask the question, why are we building these larger and larger facilities? And I think the reason is, one, some people argue economics, and that it's not economic to have a smaller facility. But my reaction to that is, well, a Royal Commission allows us to ask how much is the government willing to pay for services. So the government in the past has closed large mental health institutions. It's also closed, orphanages and disability units. So we can make a decision, but at a policy level, there are no restrictions on how big a facility can be at the moment. And some people would argue that you can build a 200-bed facility and have little households in it. But my question is, that is, how is that inviting to the local community in which it's located? You know, if you walk past it, you're going to see an institution. You don't see 30 little homes inside. So I think it's a matter of scale and also building these places so that they're connected to the local community. So when I interviewed people for my own research, people would say things like, well, once you're in a nursing home, you never see the outside world again. And that's true unless someone, you have family or friends who are going to take you out. So the smaller the facility, the more connected it can be with its local community. And there's real evidence in the United States through the greenhouse movement, which was set up by geriatrician Bill Thomas, where largely not-for-profit organisations have built much smaller households for older people to live in and move them from large institutions. And if you look on YouTube and just type in greenhouses and ageing, avoid the plant links, but there is a wonderful video showing what happens to a group of people as they moved out. So I think we have lots of evidence now that smaller is better, but often to get change in an industry as big as this, you need government to be brave and government to say that it's not going to support building of large institutions. Government has the levers there. Mental health and disability didn't change because the industry changed. They changed because governments decided that as a society, we thought smaller institutions were better. And I guess the Royal Commission is a watershed moment for that.
Yeah, like you've, as you said before, there have been so many cuts to like disability and to aged care, and because of this, a lot of organisations that were helping, were working in aged care and working in disability care have now gone private. So there's lots of different organisations and sectors that run aged care facilities. So do you believe that the quality of care that patients receive correlate with who runs these facilities?
No, you can't draw that analogy. It's a dangerous one to draw. So I've seen some commentary that says, well, it's because they, you know, the private sector's involved. The private sector is good and bad, just as the public sector can be good and bad.
Absolutely.
So I think that's a misnomer to suggest that. When I worked for the government, visited lots of nursing homes. I've actually been to lots of these places and I've seen good and bad, whether they're run for not-for-profit, the state runs them, or the private sector. So we don't certainly have evidence to draw that conclusion.
Of course.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Ralph. It's been a pleasure talking to you about this.
Terrific. And, the other thing I'd just finally say is that the baby boomer generation like me, if we don't want these places to be built as large institutions, there needs to be some activism on our part. Whereas I think a lot of baby boomers just think they won't end up in one of these places. But
yeah,
if you live long enough, you might.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Like there needs to be a big push in aged care because we're all going to get old. Like it's just a part of life.
And the head of World Health in Aging said we need a Me Too movement against ageism. So maybe that's a good place to leave it.
Of course. Thank you so much for joining us, Ralph.
Thank you, Ruby. Bye-bye.